Debbie G. from San Diego.
I brought cheat sheets. My name, Let's see if I can do better than that. My name is Debbie G., and I'm from San Diego. Hi. Nice to be here. A little nervous, but that's okay. Thank you, Randy, for asking me to speak. First I want to say happy birthday to everybody that took cakes and also to the 90 days. I remember finally taking my 90-day token when I had 7 months sober. So, you know, some of us are slower than others, and that's okay. So I basically want to start off with childhood, I guess, you know. It was funny, I was thinking about it. Okay, I've got 40 minutes, or 45 minutes, I guess it's 40 minutes, to shove 48 years, so many years of drinking, so many years of sobriety together. That gives me about 50 seconds a minute. Go, right? No. Anyway, so I was born out of seven children, the third oldest. She's married for the seventh time, so I had a lot of stepfathers growing up. I have two older brothers, and then my mom divorced, got married, had me, divorced, got married, had another girl, divorced, got married, had another girl, and I'll tell you about the other two later on. Anyway, so, you know, as I was growing up, it was like we were constantly moving, things were constantly changing, I was constantly having a new father or stepfather to deal with, and every single one of them was an alcoholic or alcoholic addict or alcoholic addict and gambleaholic. So the last place that I wanted to be when I grew up was an alcoholic, or the last thing I wanted to be when I grew up was an alcoholic. I had enough of that when I was a kid. Little did I know that the same thing that seemed to help me later on to kind of feel normal was alcohol. And therefore, you know, anyway. You know, I prayed to God to help me tonight, and I know He will. And I don't know if I should go off at this at all or whatever, but I just know when I got here to this program, I had no clue what my problem was. I was a manicurist at the time. I was 26 years old, and I didn't believe in God, but a God that I didn't believe in put three clients in my life that happened to be women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was getting weekly meetings without even having a clue while my life was crazy and I was drinking and I was using drugs and I was feeling like I was going nuts and insane and not knowing what was going on with me. And I had these women sharing about their lives, openly sharing about all the skeletons in their closet. And I could not believe that because there was no way that I was going to tell people what happened in my childhood, what happened with my life. And I remember Michaeline one time sitting across from me. We were the only two in the salon that night. And I'm doing her nails, and she starts telling me about one of the worst things that happened to her and how she ran away from home at a young age because of what happened to her. And I looked at her, and I said, wow, I just couldn't believe it. She told me this story, and I could not believe it. It was like something that, you know, you would have seen in a movie. And then I went on to tell her about, well, the worst thing that ever happened to me. And I was totally disconnected from that. And I went on to talk about a time when I was 7 years old. And then at that time, my first stepfather, who was a raging alcoholic, he used to have blackouts. He used to beat my mom constantly. Whenever he did not come home for dinner, I knew what was going to happen. And I laid in that bed and waited with, you know, just nerves and so upset knowing that he was going to come home. And he was going to beat her, and I was going to have to listen to it. You know, and I was going to have to see the bruises and the black eyes the next day and all of that. Well, this particular night, not only did he start beating her, he threw her through the shower glass door, and then he proceeded to try to drown her in the bathroom sink. So I remember hearing her gasp for air, and I remember thinking, if I don't save my mom, I'm not going to have a mom. And so I got out of bed, and I ran in there, and I pulled on him. Daddy, Daddy, stop. Please stop. And he did for just that split second. And in that split second, she raised her face up, bright red, because it was hot water. And she turned around and she looked at me. And her eyes were just so big. And she said, go back to your room. You know, and I didn't get it. You know, and I kind of get it now because it was like she just didn't want me. She thought if, as long as I didn't see that stuff, that it really wasn't that bad. And it was bad. You know, and I remember going back into my room and just crying and just praying to God. And there was a knock at the door. There's the police. Open up. And I was like, thank you, finally, my prayers are being answered. And she lied. She said she slipped and fell in the shower, and that's how she got all cut up and bruised and banged. And it was like, from that day on, it was just so hard for me to, it was like, not only was he the bad one, but now I'm the bad one, too. I didn't think of my mom as the bad one. It was like me, because I didn't do what I was supposed to do. You know, and the straight A's, I can remember that. It was like I tried to be the best kid around so that there was no other reason to fight. And I remember the next morning, what she was doing was she was cleaning out the closet. Now, our house, being German descent, was spotless. You could eat off that floor at any time. I mean, that was one of her addictions, was cleaning. That's how she dealt with stuff. She was rearranging the closet for the fifth time. And I remember when my stepdad came out. And he said, I think I'm going to leave for a few days. And I told him, I said, I hate you. And she says, and she looks at me and she says, no, you don't. You don't hate him. That's bad. You know, so I just, you know, we all have right in here, you know, in our gut, we all have this like emotional guidance system that tells us what's right and what's wrong, what's okay and what's not, whether we're drinking, whether we're using, whether we're 5 years old, whether we're 50 years old. You know, it lets us know. And I was just so messed up because it's like she's telling me one thing. I'm feeling another thing. There's constantly this huge elephant in the living room. And I have, and we're tiptoeing around it. And I have no idea. So anyway, she finally gets rid of him. I'm so grateful. My sister and I and my mom are living together for a few months. Life's wonderful. She takes us to a woman's house that I've never met before. Drops us off overnight. I just had the feeling that she was never going to show up again. She actually did. She came back the next morning. I was like, yay. She picks us up, takes us down to the car. And here's this man that I've never met before in the car. She had went off the night before to Vegas and got married to somebody I'd never met before. His name was Dick, and he was. Anyway, from that very first moment, you know, your allowance is going to be this. I'm your dad now. I'm going to tell you what to do. Da, da, da. I'm like, oh, my God, out of the fire into the frying pan. You know, it was just, here we go on another roller coaster with another dick, another asshole, whatever, you know, another, the men that she chose. Anyway, so, you know, live with him for a while and then they finally got a divorce. We lived up in Los Angeles, moved back down to San Diego. She ended up hooking up with the first one that I didn't know, my brother's dad, and lived with them for a while. And that's kind of when my drinking and using started a little bit, when I was down here. And I was in ninth grade at the time. And I remember the first time I smoked pot, and it was with my brother Doug and some people that we met in the apartments. And it's funny because years later, when I told him on the phone, when I said, you know, Doug, I'm an alcoholic addict. And he's like, how could you? You know, I'm like, wait a minute, you smoked your first joint with, or my first joint with you, you know. Anyway, so 10th grade, I actually moved in with my aunt for a while to be a live-in housekeeper babysitter. Now, mind you, I'm only 14 years old. I had skipped a grade. And I'm living with her, and I'm babysitting, and I'm taking care of the kids, and I'm cleaning the house. And they were airline pilot and stewardess, flight attendant now. And they would be gone overnight quite often, whether it was there or skiing or on their boat or whatever. And so I was left to watch the kids. Well, I remember that very first weekend when they were gone. And my cousin, who was only, he was in two grades younger than me, but he was only a few months younger than me. And, you know, everybody kept going to the bathroom and it kept smelling like beer. Well, I knew what beer was all about. I loved beer, you know. And so I said something to him about, you know, hey, you having a party in there? And he's like, why? And I said, well, why didn't you invite me? Oh, game was on, you know. It was like all of a sudden, you know, new best friend and had all these friends. And I was the one making the money, so I was the one buying some of the drugs and doing this and that. And drugs finally came into it. I mean, I had only smoked a little bit of pot, and I had drank a little bit. And then I remember one night knocking on his door. And he was in there racking up some speed. I had no clue what that was. But he says, you want to come in and help? So I came in and helped him put, you know, a little five and little pieces of, some of you guys know what this is anyway. So I'm helping him rack up this jar of speed. And afterwards he says, you know, here's one for helping me out. And I'm like, sure. So how many do I take? And he goes, all five of them. Now, I was 14 years old. I was 105 pounds, maybe 110, I don't know, something like that. And I took all five. And I felt like I was on top of the world. I mean, I remember being in that garage because it was too hot in the house. And I'm jumping rope and I'm hitting the speed bag and I'm just having a great old time. And all of a sudden my lips are sticking up. I can't, you know, talk. And my tongue's this thick and I can't, having a hard time breathing and really wanted something to drink. And one of his friends, one of my cousin's friends says, here, and he hands me this big old jar. I forget what kind of jar it was, of water. So I thought, drink it all the way down, almost all the way down. About here, I can feel that it's starting to get hot. It was like, oh, shit, what'd you give me? And it was straight vodka. I ended up passing out before I made it out to the backyard, and they carried me out there. I should have been in having my stomach pumped. There's no doubt about it. And I remember, I don't know, that's just the very beginning, you know, and then there was things after things. When I got here, though, it's so weird, the denial, you know, do not even know I am lying. I love Mickey B. He was here not too long ago. And I thought, you know, well, I didn't go to jail. I didn't lose my kids. I've never been arrested. I've never had a DUI. You know, all these things that I know that are just yes. If I go back out there, all those things will at some point happen. I know without a doubt. But I just, you know, when I first got in here, I thought, I don't belong because I didn't do those things. And I figure one of these days you guys are going to find out who I am and you're going to kick me out and say, you got to do some more research and come back, you know. And then when I started working my steps and I realized, you know, I did enough stuff. I felt like I wanted to die on a daily basis when I got in here, you know. And so it was like I decided that, anyway, I want to fast forward through that. Sorry, get kind of off track. That's why I have some notes. I ended up at 16 years old meeting a guy, getting pregnant, deciding I was going to have the baby. I really tried to not drink, and I drank hardly, just barely while I was pregnant, thank God, you know. And but after I had Jesse, I ended up drinking quite a bit again, partying again. And then I ended up having another baby, Jake. And I remember, again, just having this one particular night. It was like, because I did not drink most of the time while I was pregnant, it was like it was Halloween. And it was like, I've got a sitter all night long. I don't have to worry about the kids. We're staying at our friend's house. You know, game's on. I can have fun. And I don't know what all I drank, but I drank a lot of different things. Smoked pot, did some coke. And then one of my friends offered me some mushrooms. And, you know, I know this is an AA meeting, but all of that is my story. So, and the thing is I was sitting there having what I thought was a great time, and all of a sudden I couldn't see anymore. I literally went blind. And it was pretty freaky. And I'm telling my girlfriend next to me, who happened to be a nurse, I said, you know, I can't see. And she says, what do you mean you can't see? I can't see. Well, what do you mean? I mean, like, I can't see. You know? And I could hear in her voice, she was getting nervous, and she goes, well, what do you want me to do? And I said, now, I've wore glasses since I was 5 years old, since I started kindergarten, because I couldn't see the chalkboard. When I was 15 years old, I made enough money babysitting to buy myself contacts. So in my messed up mind, it was like, well, as long as we take my contacts out, it's okay. Because I can't see very well without my contacts. So in my messed up mind at that point, it's like, as long as we take my contacts out, I'm going to be fine. So anyway, she gives me two glasses, and I tell her, you know, make sure only put a little bit of water, put them up high so nobody drinks them. I mean, I was with it enough for all that. But I was so, anyway, so I ended up passing out not long after that. And the next morning I woke up, and it was just like I could see again, and I remembered that I couldn't see. And did I ever think, no, I shouldn't drink anymore, I shouldn't do this anymore, I shouldn't do that? No. It was like, I won't ever do that particular combination again. Don't have the shots with the this, with the that, with the, you know. And so anyway, it's just another one of those things that, you know, until I did my steps and wrote all this stuff down, I kind of forgot about that stuff. because I just wanted to bury it and pretend like it never happened. And then when I started working my steps and writing down, because I had a sponsor that said to me when I started my first step, she said, I want you to write down every single time from the first time that you can remember drinking and or using drugs. I want you to write down what you did and what happened as a consequence and stuff like that, you know. And that really helps you to figure out that you might be powerless over drugs and alcohol when you kind of see that stuff in front of you in black and white and you're sharing it with somebody else. So anyway, I ended up getting a divorce from my first husband. Things were really tough at the time. That was also a point in my life when a real good friend came along called Crystal Meth. And I remember the first time I did that, and I was like, how can you even do this? This was terrible. I mean, it just killed my nose. And then the next day, that was it. I wanted more. And it helped me to drink. That was another thing. I was a lightweight. I remember the very first time I drank. It was one Schlitz malt liquor tall. And I passed out. And I thought to myself, I don't ever have to worry about becoming an alcoholic because I can't drink. At 14 years old, and I pass out from drinking one drink, and I remember having that thought. And it's just like, that's just nuts even having that thought. So anyway, the crystal meth allowed me to like drink like all my friends drank. And I ended up meeting another guy. I ended up getting married again. And my drug use, he did not like it, so I hid. And then that was like one of the things that really took me to my bottom was trying to do this double life, you know. And I remember thinking to myself, well, it's not too bad because I only use on the weekends. You know, mind you, yeah. I was a manicurist at the time, and my work schedule was 12 to 14-hour days, only 3 days a week. So my weekends were 4 days long. That I only used on the weekends, you know. When we read that part more about alcoholism, where it says, you know, we drank only beer, we did only this, we did only that, you know, for me it needs to say, you know, one of the things I did to help me drink more was crystal meth. But anyway, so now I'm going to fast forward to the part where I said about Michaeline sitting across from me and telling me that terrible story. And then I told her that terrible story about my childhood. And I said it as if I was not even there, like it never happened to me. And she looked at me and she said, okay, now I'm going to tell you that same story that you just told me. Only I want you to pretend like it's me telling you that story. I'm like, okay, I can do that. So she tells me that story. And it hit me. It was like an aha. Wow, that was bad, wasn't it? She's like, yeah. So, you know, I started thinking about things that happened, and I'm like, you know, and I know now that one of the reasons that I drank and used drugs was to shove all that stuff down, you know, to keep that down because it was so painful. And so then as a God that I didn't understand or believe in, you know, how things happen, I love this saying I heard early on in sobriety, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. I had one of my clients brought in this book called Women Who Love Too Much. I'm filing her nails, and I'm reading it upside down as she's reading through it and reading the front and back cover, and I think to myself, pretty good book. She closes it, and I said, yeah, it looks like a good book there. She goes, I just finished. You want it? I would have never went out and bought it. I took the book. I started reading it, and out of those three clients that I had that were in the program where I was sort of like getting a meeting, you know, three times a week and didn't even realize it, one of them happened to be a therapist. So I told her about this book. A therapist needs to know about this really good book, right? So I tell her about this book, Women Who Love Too Much, and she goes, oh, yeah. Actually, they have meetings for that, too. I'm going to one Monday night. Do you want to go? And I said, no. But hold on. Yes came out of my mouth. I swear to God. I said no, and I heard myself say yes. That was God working. That wasn't me. And I was like, shit, now what do I do? If I tell her that I said no and yes came out of my mouth, she's going to think I'm nuts, which I was already thinking that I was going nuts. Anyway, so I went. I went to that meeting that night. And that was another aha for me. You know, it was like I sat in that room with a bunch of women. It was all women at that time in that meeting. And it was funny because everybody else was already in recovery of some sort, whether it be AA, Al-Anon, OA, whatever. They were all in recovery. I was the only one that this was like my first introduction to recovery. And so what we did was we read a chapter a night, or a chapter a week, and then we shared on it the next week. And that particular book actually has 10 steps, which are very similar to our 12 steps. So it was kind of, you know, they talk about people coming in through the back door of AA, which is usually Al-Anon. I came in through the back door of the back door of AA. So I'm reading through that book on a weekly basis, and it comes to a part where it says women who love too much, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm one of those, tend to become addicted to drugs or alcohol. And there went that light bulb again. Shit, it's the crystal meth. That's why I feel like I'm going nuts. I'm just going to quit doing it, and I'm going to be fine. And so I quit doing it for 3 weeks. Didn't do any. And then I put myself around somebody who I knew was going to offer. This was a client's husband, and I used to see him quite often at my local Lucky. They're now Albertsons, I think, but it was Lucky or whatever it was at the time. And he used to drive for Dreyer's Ice Cream. So I just so happened to shop the same time every Tuesday afternoon, and I ran into him. Imagine that. And I ran into him this time, and I thought, you know, I can say no. And he says, you know, come get some ice cream. And I'm like, I can say yes to the ice cream. It's okay. I don't have to do the crystal. No problem. Well, it was at that point that I realized I couldn't say no. I hadn't done any for 3 weeks. I did the biggest line that I had ever done. I left there thinking I was having a heart attack and feeling like I should be calling 911. And my little boy at the time, Jake, who was with me, was saying, Mommy, what's wrong? And it was like, I knew because, oh, another thing, I stole pamphlets. I thought that I was stealing. It says free to the newcomer, right? You know, we had that Women Who Love Too Much meeting at the Neighborhood Recovery Center in La Mesa, and there were all these pamphlets, and I'd wait until nobody was around, and I'd pick and choose different ones, excuse me, and I started reading them. And I saw in there, you know, the steps. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol or drugs or whatever the case may be. And it was like at that point, it was like, I am. I'm totally powerless. I did not want to do it. I totally didn't want to do it. I know that's my problem. And so I ended up telling everybody at that meeting that next Monday night. And the woman that facilitated the meeting said to me, you know, are you going to any other meetings for this? And I said, no. And she goes, well, it's a lot easier if you do. You know, why white knuckle it? So I started trying other meetings. The first one I tried was an Al-Anon meeting because during this discovery time, I realized that I thought my mom might be an alcoholic. So I tried Al-Anon for a while, you know, which did help me, definitely. And then I tried some NA meetings, and I just couldn't relate. I was trying this one that was a bunch of young kids complaining about their parents, and it just didn't work for me. And then I tried CA. Definitely could relate to that preamble, but it was at Battery Chargers that I found my home at API on Sunday morning. And interestingly enough, I was actually born on Easter Sunday in that hospital. Supposedly, my mom tells me, I have no idea, that used to be La Mesa General Hospital. So it was like I came back home, you know. And that's where I found the love. That's where going to that meeting, hearing recovery, seeing the whites of your eyes, not just the whites of your eyes, but it's like you had this shine, like your open heart was coming through them. And I just felt like this, like I had this huge hole that the wind blew right through me, you know. And you kept saying, keep coming back, keep coming back. And I did, you know, just every Sunday. That was it. I finished that Women Who Love Too Much thing, and I kept coming back every Sunday, you know. And then at one point I realized that maybe more than one meeting a week would be nice. You know, and part of that was because I was married to a man at the time that hated that I was doing one meeting a week. He was losing his drinking buddy. You know, he didn't like that at all. And so anyway, I started going to a few more meetings. Sorry, look at my notes here. Oh, that's what I was going to say, too. So when I first got in here, I didn't know my sobriety date. You know, because my date was the date that I quit using drugs, 8/25/06. And when it came closer to 8/25/07, I was asking people in that meeting to give me a cake. And everybody's going, well, you know, what's your sobriety date? And I said, well, the last time I used drugs was, no. What's your sobriety date? And I'm like, I don't know. And I finally quit drinking after a while because every single time I drank, I wanted to do drugs. You know? So it was like the drinking got farther and farther in between and less. And finally I'm like, you know, if I'm not an alcoholic, why don't I just quit drinking? And then I don't have to worry about becoming one. Not realizing I already was. It was just my bottom was on the drugs rather than on the alcohol. But I didn't want to have to go out there and hit another bottom. To me, it was bad enough. Even though I didn't have the jail and this and that, I lost my self-esteem. I literally wanted to die on a daily basis. Like I said, I didn't believe in God. I had a lot of, with that first stepfather that used to beat my mom all the time, the only time we went to church was after he beat her so he could be forgiven. You know? It was like, I did not like God. You know, God did not work in my life. When I first got to meetings and people were saying the G word, it was like I was doing this, la, 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 you know. Say the F word, but don't say the G word. Because that just, I couldn't handle it. And then after a while, when I was here, I'd listen, and every now and then, you know, I heard somebody say something like, if you have a hard time with the word God, you can use group of drunks. So, when somebody would say God, I'd say in my head really quick, group of drunks, so I could listen to the rest of what they were saying. And I found out that those people that tended to use that word actually had better things coming out of their mouth than the people who didn't. So I was like, I was learning a little bit more from those that had a relationship with a higher power. And so I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. I actually worked the steps pretty slowly. I was up to about step 7, and I was almost 3 years sober. Now, at the time, I was going to a step study meeting, and you know, some of the old-timers in there were kind of mad at me because we'd read on the step, and they would share on it, and I'd share on it even if I hadn't worked the step. And they were like, we need to get you in a real step study where you can work the steps. And so one of the women in that meeting, she started a Monday morning step study because she said, when can you go to one? I'm like, oh, the only time I have free is Monday mornings, thinking that's not going to happen. She started a Monday morning step study for me. And pretty much that Monday morning step study is still going on to this day. And so, and that's been 18 years, 18 and a half years. So what I like about a step study for me personally is I've got this perfectionistic side where I want to do everything perfectly, you know, and the first step that I did, which was, I don't know, 30 or 40 pages long at least, something like that, it took me forever getting my steps done because I couldn't do them perfectly. Well, in a step study, you only have a week to work on whatever step it is. I get, you know, it's like whatever's right there in front of my face right now, I could deal with and get that done and work on that and work on those resentments that came up right then and work all the way through. And I've been in that step study off and on for the major part of that 18 years. And look at my notes again anyway. So a step study is great. Because working the steps is the program. We don't have steps in here. Oh, they're over there. Working the steps is the program. I mean, I know there are a lot of people that come in here and maybe work them once or work them once and then continue to do 10, 11, and 12. And if that works for them, that's great. For me, I love continuing to work them over. I don't say maybe I don't love it all the time. But the thing is I found out that if you don't work the steps work you, you know. Eventually, somehow, you're going to have to do a fourth step and a fifth step. And really, they're not as bad as they seem to be. You know, you learn a lot about yourself, and actually, then you can see what's going on, what's keeping you stuck and not doing things that you wanted, the way you want to do them. You know, because when I was a kid, there were certain things that I did that helped me to live. But calling myself a piece of shit in my head on a regular basis, because that's what my dad did, didn't help me to live anymore. And I don't want to do that anymore. You know, when working those steps, they help me, and they help me not only look at the bad part, but the good part. So I was one of those people that, you know, I could just look at that bad part and look at that and then be so depressed, you know. And so I got to look at, okay, what good did I do, you know, and realize that there's a lot of good in all of us, every single one of us, no matter where we've been, there's good parts to us. You know, so I think it's really important when you're working that fourth step that you also look at that, too. Anyway, I got to talk about this trip to Germany. When I was, it was in 1990, so I was 3 years sober at the time. And I went to Germany with my sister to visit my brother. And my sister at the time was clean and sober with me, so that was really cool. Thank God. She's not now. But we went to Germany, and my brother, the first thing he says when we get there is, you got to try the German beer here. I'm like, no, can't do that. Oh, you got to try German beer. Nope, not even a taste. Nope. And anyway, the whole time we were there, 2.5 weeks, we were trying to make it to meetings. For some reason, there was something going on. We were constantly trying to make it to meetings on the base, and they didn't have them. They got moved, they got canceled, whatever. So one Friday night, we finally made it to this women's meeting, and it was an open-ended women's meeting. It actually went on for about 2.5 hours. And it was a great meeting. And we went from that meeting, we left from there and drove in the middle of the night out to Berlin. Got to Berlin, got to see cool parts of Berlin, came back. And on the way back, I got really, really sick. I did not know what was going on with me. My niece actually had chicken pox when we first got there. So I thought maybe, you know, there's German measles. I don't know, maybe there's German chicken pox. But I had these red bumps all over me. Well, my sister-in-law ended up kicking my sister and I out. Thank goodness she's not our sister-in-law anymore. Not because of that. Well, maybe. Anyway, that didn't happen then. My brother took a long, long time to find a new one. Anyway, she kicked us out. And here we are, Sunday night in Germany, have no place to go, no more cash money. There weren't ATMs back then. Couldn't just go get money. Thank God I had numbers of people in this program. From that one meeting, that one night, and I hope to God someday I see Donna and Michael again. They were my angels that just saved me. And we called up and I said, you know, can we come and spend the night with you? We can't stay here any longer. And my brother drove us over there. They gave us directions. And we stayed there. I woke up the next morning. They were already at work. It's Monday morning. I woke up. I couldn't hardly open my eyes. I go to the bathroom. This one's swollen shut. This one's half swollen shut. My head's swollen this big. I've got these red welts everywhere all over my whole body. And I remember trying to wake my sister up, which is really hard to wake Kim up. Kim, wake up, you know. And she wakes up and she's like, she's just looking at me with her eyes like this. And she's like, afraid to say anything. I said, I'm really sick. I need help. She's like, yeah. So we were looking through all their information, trying to find a number of somebody to contact, because I can't get a hold of my brother. He's at work. I'm not calling my sister-in-law. Luckily, a friend of theirs calls to say, hey, do you guys want to go to an AA meeting tonight? I can come pick you up and take you to an AA meeting. And she says, his name is Hans. She says, Hans, my sister's really, really sick. I don't know what's wrong, but she needs to go to the doctor. So Hans says, I'll call you right back. And I was so upset because it's like she didn't get a number or anything. Anyway, he calls back in about 15 minutes, has her take down all this information. Here's the address. Here's the doctor's name. Here's my phone number in case you have any problems there. I'm having a cab come and pick you up at this time. You know, and I just couldn't believe it. This person that I had never met in my life, that's a friend of this person that I met for, you know, 2 hours at a meeting. So anyway, I get picked up, go to the doctor's office. I'm trying to explain what's going on. I'm showing a picture of my passport because I don't normally look like this. She's like, oh, yeah, you know, trying to, you know, the one girl speaks a little bit of English, so we're trying to figure it out. I figure out, she gave me a few different things. One was to help the swelling, another one was for something else, and then said to not have anything but bread or water. You know, and I was to leave on an airplane the next morning, so I thought, okay, you know, as long as I can fly home the next morning, I'm fine. They come home that night, and I'm actually not doing much better. And luckily, he was a medic in the military, Michael. And Michael called the hospital there, the U.S. hospital in Germany, and they wouldn't let me come there because they said, you have to know if it's life or death. And he said, it could be. I don't know. And they wouldn't let me come. So Hans comes back over, and I finally get to meet him. And we go to the German hospital, and he's translating, and they're giving me an IV, and they're giving me all this stuff. And I'm just shaking like this because it feels like every single vein in my body is on fire. And he's like, you need to give her something for pain. You need to get home. I'm like, no. I'm just constantly, thank God for the serenity prayer, saying the serenity prayer over and over and over and over again. But you know what? I was able that next day to fly home. And I tell you, you know, I couldn't pay for the bill then. I wrote a letter to Hans, and he wrote a letter back to me and said, you know, the kind of person that I used to be before AA, I would have never helped anybody else out. But the kind of person I am today, I can do that. You don't worry about a thing. And basically, before the movie Pay It Forward came out, he told me to do that. You know, so I've been able to help different people out at different times. You know, because somebody that didn't even know me that's in this program, this program You know, we've got so much AA family. I personally have so much AA family just sitting right here in this room tonight. You know, and I love you guys. And even if I don't know you, I love you. Because I know you've been, it may not be the exact same thing, but we've been through hell and back, you know. And we have this common bond here, you know, and we help each other stay sober. And then I met in the program also, I met my wonderful husband, Greg. So I'm going to fast forward through to that part. I was on a camp out, an AA camp out. I remember when I first got into the program thinking, I'm never going to have fun again. How can you have fun if you don't drink and use, right? How can you have fun? And I'm at this camp out, and I meet this wonderful guy, and we were kind of going to some of the same meetings. And I knew he was going through divorce. I was going through divorce, you know, stuff like that. But you guys were at the camp out, weren't you? Anyway, so yeah, I kind of get to know him a little bit. The camp out, it poured down rain. It was the May Day Madness, and it just poured down rain. And all the people that were in our little group left because of the fact that they were all in tents. I was in a camper, and he was in a tent trailer, and so we ended up staying for a while. You know, got to know him a little bit better. And then we decided to get another group of people together from the Wednesday night and Friday night meeting that we used to go to. And it was going to rain. It looked like it was going to rain again, so they all bailed. And so one of my girlfriends and then Greg and myself and my kids, we ended up going camping again. And it was just like there was some sparks, you know. And then there was another thing that was really, really cool around that same time was the international convention here. I don't know how many of you got a chance to go to that, but I tell you, if they could bottle that feeling and sell it, you could make a lot of money. It's so cool. If you've never been, well, just here, the regular convention that we have every year is really cool. But that international convention was just awesome. I volunteered for that and got to be a greeter and got to meet people from all over the world that were here, all these different countries. And it was just so electric. It was great, you know. And then Greg and I started dating, and life was just, I mean, it's so much easier for me living with somebody that's in the program, that's like-minded, that, you know, goes to meetings, that shares their stuff, that helps keep me grounded, rather than with somebody that's constantly drinking, that's bringing over all the alcoholics in the neighborhood and partying in my backyard, and I have to stay away from my house, you know. And we ended up having a beautiful wedding out in Sedona, Arizona, in a medicine wheel, a Native American wedding, which most of the people that were there, if they weren't family, they were in the program. And it was absolutely wonderful. And then when we came back, we had a big get-together here in a park, and it was almost all AA people, you know, and that was really cool. And then we ended up having a little boy. You know, and to do all this stuff again and do it in sobriety, you know, with what I feel is my soulmate, is just so different from before. It's just so different, you know. And I'm not saying that life isn't tough now and then, because there were a few things that were just kind of rough. Most of it was, like, on my part, having physical things happen to me, like back injuries and snapping my plantar fascial ligament and being a boot cast for 5 months. And then I get out of that. I was in it for 5 months. 2 days later, I get rear-ended. I'm flat on my back for a long time. And for somebody that's extremely active, I was playing soccer 3 days a week at the time. And then to be, like, not be able to do anything and not get the endorphins going, I got pretty depressed, you know. But the thing is I continued going to that step study. I continued going to other meetings. I continued sharing with women in the program about what was going on with me. You know, and then life started getting better again, and it started getting really good. And then the fires hit, 2003. We lost our home in the fire. And, you know, there were a lot of you that were there for us, you know, that came out and sifted through stuff, that helped us move kind of out. We didn't have anything to move out, but, you know, helped us move back in and stuff like that. And my AA family just means so much to me. I mean, if you're new here tonight, or even if you've been here for a little while, you know, if the miracle hasn't happened yet for you, make sure you stick around until it does. Because life is just so much better. And not to say that things don't happen in our life, because, you know, we lose family members. We lose loved ones. We, you know, life still goes on. Just because we're clean and sober doesn't mean all of a sudden, you know, we stay on this pink cloud forever. It might happen for a few months, but usually at some point, you know, the shit hits the fan and life happens. And that's what, you know, having the telephone is for, that 500-pound telephone. That's what working the steps, you know, being in a step study, doing things on a regular basis, going and sharing with people. I mean, I remember at 17, I didn't see our time, I got to close real quick, at 17 and a half years sober, feeling like I just couldn't do it anymore. And I ended up, and it was 6 months after the fires hit, and I was having a really tough time. And I ended up going to therapy again for a while, you know. And thank goodness, you know, and it says in that book, some of us need outside help, and I've needed outside help quite a few different times. But all the while, I still continue to come in here. I still continue to try to be open-hearted and open-minded to share with you guys who I am, what's going on with me, so that you can help me. And at the same token, I hope that when I'm sharing that stuff with you, that it might also help you too. Thanks for letting me share tonight.